Hello, everyone. This is Susie Ward, welcoming you to another Matthew and Friends. When Matthew and I connected telepathically at the beginning of 1994, as far as I know, we were the only mother and son collaborating on Heaven to Earth books. But about 5 years ago, I started hearing about other mothers who also were hearing from their children in the spirit world, and they were cooperating to produce books too. And I was thrilled, not just because I'd been feeling so alone, that I was the only one doing this, but much more important to me was that new books were coming out, and that meant that more telepathic connections were opening and making more spiritual information available. The few of these books that I've read have really touched me deeply. In all cases, our children left at a young age and with the same mission, to send us mothers the truth about the world we call heaven and life in that world, the purpose of multiple lifetimes, and the universal laws that govern our lives that we don't know about. Each of the books has its unique value, and each one confirms the truth in the others. And I always so welcome confirmation of the information in the Matthew books. A short time ago, I read A Swan in Heaven by Terry Daniel and her son Danny. Danny was 16 when he died in September of 2006. After a long illness. And I marveled at the contrast between Terry's experience and my own. After Matthew died suddenly at age 17 in 1980, it took almost 14 years for me to heal enough so that he could reach me. Terry was in such a state of grace and acceptance that immediately after Danny died, he sent her an image of himself, and within just a few days after that, he started sending her long messages. Only a few months later, Terry published her book, A Swan in Heaven, with many passages of Danny's remarkable wisdom. It's a huge delight for me that Terry is with us today and can tell you herself the heartwarming story about her and her son and his amazingly insightful information about intimate karmic relationships and other things that so impact our lives. Terry, hi.
Hi, Susie.
Ah, good. You are there.
I am here.
Okay. I know you wanted to send an email to your mother.
It's all done. I sent it to her.
Okay. Great. Terry, where would you like to start?
Well, I guess since you talked about how your experience was different than mine, it would probably help for me to clarify that Danny did not die suddenly. He was sick for a very long time. I knew since he was 10 years old, he had a 5 to 10 year life expectancy. He had a rare disease called leukodystrophy. So by the time he began the process of dying, I was very prepared for it. I knew that he wasn't going to be around long, and he was so sick and so severely disabled that it was a wonderful relief to have him get out of that body. So I probably had started my healing process long before he actually died, and that probably has a lot to do with why he spoke to me so easily and so quickly, because we had time to prepare for it. And as, you know, he was growing up and getting older and his disease was getting more serious, we talked about death all the time. And I would tell him my philosophy, if you will, you know, what I think happens when we die, and that we can vibrate in more than one frequency at a time and still talk to each other after he dies. And So I guess you could say I sort of set him up for this, you know. I mean, I taught him what I knew, but of course he knew much more than I could have ever possibly known.
I remember reading that during that time when both you and Danny were anticipating his death, that you actually did develop a form of telepathic communication that probably did facilitate his ability to reach you with all those stunning messages of such wisdom,
well,
you know, just
it, yeah.
So quickly.
Well, I think it more facilitated my ability to hear him. I think he probably already had the ability to communicate across dimensions like that. But, yeah, it did. You know, I taught him how to meditate. When he was very little, or he was not very little, he was 11, and we did. We talked about it a lot, and I said, you know, after you go to heaven, I will be there with you, even though my body is still on earth. I will be with you, and you will be with me, because we're just made of energy, and it doesn't matter where our bodies are placed in space and time, or even if we have bodies, we'll still be together. So it's an interesting question. You know, I've never even asked him this question. And it was, were those conversations part of what made you able to talk to me, or were they part of what made me able to talk to you? I don't know.
You know, even after 14 years of talking with Matthew, I still get questions that I haven't asked him.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah, well, I think it shows that we're constantly growing, that we keep questioning. We don't feel we know it all. You know, one thing that I was so delighted to read is that I think this was in Danny's first message to you that came about 10 days after he died,
mm-hmm.
that he told you that when he was very little, maybe 4 years old, he still remembered his life on Jupiter,
mm-hmm.
but then as he got older, that faded and he forgot about it. But as his illness progressed, the memories of that life returned to him. Has he talked any more about his life on Jupiter?
Not recently, not since he died, but he used to talk to me about it when he was little, when he was on Earth. He was 4 years old, and he would always joke around and say, hey, I come from Jupiter. Well, I knew he wasn't joking. We used to think, because he was adopted, that maybe he had a sense that he had another family somewhere else. That's what my husband at the time thought. But I knew he was talking about another family really somewhere else. And he told me about what life on Jupiter is like, that he had parents there and friends and family, and he used to also tell me about something he called Ghost City, which is where you go when you die. This is him at 4 years old telling me this, that it's a place that looks just like Earth, but you go there to learn things. And the ultimate final thing you learn is how to drive a car. So, you know, this was a four-year-old child talking, but it was amazing. After he died and we had that conversation, he basically thanked me for believing him when he was four and he was telling me about Jupiter, and that I trusted him, you know, and I didn't just dismiss him or laugh at him, but that I really listened and I was really interested because I understood exactly what he was saying. And as I began to study more metaphysical things, and I don't really know that much about this, but there's a whole thing about Jupiterians and who they are and what they mean, and I haven't even begun to learn about that yet. You probably know about that.
Oh, no, no.
Oh, okay.
I have a lot of room left to fill with learning, Jerry.
I know, me
too. A huge, huge amount.
Well, it's funny, Susie, because when you and I talk and email, we find out that there are a lot of things that neither of us knows that people would expect us to know. And we don't.
That is true. Or that they expect Matthew to know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I get emails from people who ask him to heal the individuals themselves or their children. Many say, please ask Matthew to tell me my mission in life. Yes, and, you know, as highly evolved as both our sons are, and they are, they don't know everything about the countless souls in this universe, well, even here on Earth, the 6 billion here on Earth. They don't have energy streamers with all of them. But at any rate, you know what? You and I have talked about the similarities, the many similarities between what Danny told you and what I've heard from Matthew. And of course, neither of us knew about the other.
Right.
As I mentioned a few minutes ago, I so welcome confirmation of information that I've received in the books, especially because those the fourth book came out at the end of 2003, and the messages have continued. But so much in the books was so alien to my knowing, and I just had to go on trust that it is correct.
Yes.
Because, you know, my name is on the book. I just didn't publish it.
You have to stand behind it, I guess. Well, that's, you know, that brings up a couple interesting things back to what you were saying earlier. When people ask if Matthew can do a reading for their personal life, I've struggled with this too because people ask me that and I start to say to myself, well, I wonder if I'm supposed to be able to do that. Can Danny do readings for people? No, he never really has. And I learned from Danny, when I asked him this, he said, you know, there are some intuitives that have guides that will read other people, and that is what those intuitives have to offer to the world. There are others of us that have guides, like our sons and other guides that we work with, who just give us general information about how things work. And I used to feel kind of inadequate because people would ask me, you know, to tune into their boyfriend or something, you know, and I couldn't do it. And I realized that that's not what I'm here to do. I'm here to just take Danny's messages about the journey of the soul and this world that we call heaven. I love the way you said that earlier, and just share the information. You know, not all people who speak to us from the other side are here to act as guides for other humans.
Mm-hmm.
They're just here to give general information.
That's my understanding, too. listeners who, excuse me, who are familiar with the books know that in some of them, Matthew has had some pretty extensive communication through me with those individuals, and you know, when I mentioned there are still things that I'm thinking of asking him, it was several years later when I said, well, how could you know so much about them and not be able to know the same thing about somebody else who's interested? And he said, Mother, I have been connected with them telepathically and in love bonds and energetically long before they contacted you. And
so those people are people he's in some sort of soul group
exactly,
with.
Exactly. Yes, already.
Okay.
You know, say the term soul cluster.
Uh-huh.
You know. So that's why he could so easily answer their questions and talk about the missions they had chosen.
But not so for others.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Well, not so for most others.
Right. Interesting.
Yeah.
And then there are, you know, channelers and readers and people that I've worked with who can read anybody.
Yes,
because that's
that,
their particular
yeah,
purpose.
That is their gift. It's
yes.
what they signed up to do, so it's their mission.
Exactly. I also wanted to say, because I think your listeners would love this story of how I found you. And it was not that long ago, last summer, spring, I guess, and a friend of mine sent me one of Matthew's messages from your website, and I just loved it and said, oh, my God, this is another woman who talks to her son. So, of course, I ordered the first book, and I sat, as soon as it was delivered to my house, I ripped the packaging off, and I sat down and read it, and I'm reading and reading, and I hear you asking Matthew, what are you doing in heaven? Do you have a job? Do you have a purpose? And he tells you that he's sort of like in something like medical school, and he's working with energy and all this, and all of a sudden, off the page, jumps this phrase, making weather. He's making weather. And this just knocked me off my chair because 6 months earlier, Danny had said the exact same thing to me. Because I had asked him the same question, what are you doing in heaven? He told me he was in medical school, and he said he was making weather. And so that's when I just said, I have to call this woman. But I think what we figured out was that it wasn't Matthew that said making weather. It was you that said making weather, interpreting what he said. I never was clear on that.
Well, I think I may have used the expression making weather after he told me how the manifesting capabilities of the souls living in nirvana, which is the correct name of the world we call heaven, the proper name of it, that they have the capability to make weather in their immediate surroundings.
Yes.
I mean, for instance, if somebody wants to go skiing, they make snow. But people who nearby who want to have a picnic or go swimming don't want a snowstorm. So it's localized weather that they can make.
And
you know, Terry, when I read your book, I could actually pick up the same terminology in some cases.
Yes.
Not just descriptive, but the same wording that I'd heard from Matthew.
Yeah, isn't that something?
And
when Danny talked about making weather, he wasn't talking specifically about weather like snow and sun. That was included in it, but he was talking about how to manifest anything using the same idea of, you know, ions and energy and particles and light and stuff that's way above my head to actually describe. He describes it much better than I do. And he launched off of that to talk about how manifestation happens in general and how we all manifest our reality by originating with thought and putting so much focus and so much energy on that thought that it actually becomes dense enough to become matter. And you know, these are the kinds of things that he was talking to me about, aside from, you know, the heart teachings about love and forgiveness and how family bonds and soul groups are formed and relationships and all of that. I mean, he got into some pretty scientific stuff, just like Matthew does.
I'm glad you brought, you extended manifesting beyond weather. That, of course, that blew my mind when I heard that he was doing that. But yes, it's an innate ingredient in our souls, just like consciences, that we have this power to create or manifest what we concentrate on, that it starts with an idea, and then we feed that because we can visualize it. It comes from the heart. The desire comes from the heart. And The process may include some pretty mundane things too, steps that we have to go through, but just keeping our minds and hearts focused on that is what brings about the change that we want or the product that we want. And that includes everything from a peaceful relationship to a peaceful world. And that's really what's going on now.
Absolutely. And that's what creates everything. And that's, you know, if you take just a really trite cliche like positive thinking, which is just a very simple way of explaining what you just said, anything that you put your intention on is what is going to happen. So if you look at someone who feels that their life is out of control and nothing's going the way they want, the secret, the real secret, is to realize that you are creating it exactly the way you want, and you can use the same power to change it. And that's, you know, that was the thing that bothered me about the book and the movie, The Secret, because they were skipping a really important part of that, where you can't just be somebody going along your life and thinking that you want some more money or a gold Cadillac and think about it and focus on it and create that. You have to first do the soul cleansing and the spiritual work, because you can't just have the gold Cadillac or the harmonious relationship until you do some really exposing of yourself. And the way that you do that is through prayer and meditation. You know, I think this was a real disservice that was done to a lot of people who fell in love with that book, The Secret, is they thought, well, I just have to think about it. And there's techniques for that. You know, there are techniques for meditation and for prayer and for tuning in to energy and changing the direction that it's going in. At least this is what I think. You know, you can't just close your eyes and snap your fingers and it's there. There's a big, big process involved. And that's the secret behind The Secret.
Yes, I think that the originators of The Secret, the Hickses, had the right idea. And as Matthew has often said, whatever is devised for goodness can be distorted and used for less pure intentions.
Yes.
And I think that's what happened with The Secret, that it focused too much on prosperity that means worldly goods, material goods,
right,
instead of growth of the spirit and manifesting goodness in one's personal life that then radiates out to all lives that that person touches. So I'm glad you mentioned that too. You know, as much as we've had the chance to talk, a lot is emerging in this show today, Terry.
And there is a lot to talk about.
Indeed. I know another thing that is related here that Danny talked about is our self-healing mechanisms, the body's self-healing mechanisms, that we tend not to know about, or, I mean, we don't know about, and therefore we look externally for remedies and cures, and all too often it's some pharmaceutical which just exacerbates the condition that we really want to relieve. And Danny also talked about the effectiveness of prayer, and you mentioned that too. I'd just like to add that a common concept of prayer, particularly among the religiously devout, is that it's the prayers of the crowds in church where they repeat, you know, the same thing, and say kneeling beside the bed at nighttime and, mm-hmm. and saying, God, please let this happen, or whatever the prayer is. And that's so limiting. That is so limiting to what Matthew has explained prayer is.
Exactly.
Which is every single thought and feeling that we have that registers in the universe. And it is, the prayer is what brings to us what we are asking for through every thought and feeling.
Right. And another misconception about prayer, and this is very hard for a lot of people to deal with, is the traditional notion of prayer is asking God to intervene and cut you a break.
Yeah.
About something. You know, basically it's to stop something bad or painful from happening. Well, let's back up for a minute, because if you ask somebody to define what happiness is, regardless of what they're saying, probably what they're meaning is, well, the definition of happiness would be, you know, a minimum of conflict and pain. That would be happiness. And, of course, we wouldn't be here. That isn't even possible. You have to have conflict to trigger change and growth. So what prayer is for a lot of people is wanting to stop pain from happening, wanting to stop trauma and shock and discomfort from happening. So people pray and say to God, you know, please don't let this happen. Please don't let my child die. Please don't let me have cancer. And it doesn't work that way. I mean, because we created that situation in the first place. And if we're praying, I think the best thing that we can say is, what an interesting thing I have given myself, cancer. I pray to see the truth of this. I pray to see the highest purpose in this. How can I use this to generate more growth and more love, to heal other people around me, to heal myself, not necessarily of this disease, because the healing of this disease might be death. Death is certainly a form of healing a disease. But obviously my soul chose this somewhere in its plan for the purpose of some sort of work that needs to be done, not only by me, but by the people who are around me and who are affected by this. And to me, this is what I've learned from Danny. And I talk about in the book, in the chapter where I'm afraid my dog's going to get hit by a car, and I'm praying about, should I take my dog for a walk on this in this canyon where the trucks are driving? And all I learned is that what I do by prayer is I open myself up to guidance. And the guidance may say, yes, take him for a walk, and he still might get hit by a car. Or the guidance may say, if you pray about a life decision, you can sense it in your being. When you're open and you've been attuned to this through prayer and meditation, where you're sensing a direction. Should I live here? Should I live there? Should I marry this person? Should I be celibate? Whatever. And you follow that guidance, and it doesn't mean that it's going to be pain-free. It means it's going to give you the lessons that you came in to learn. So we can't pray to avoid pain or to even be taken out of pain when we're in pain. All of that happens for a reason. We created it in the first place.
And that is the wisdom that eludes so many of us, because it is hard. But it goes back to just what you said, what we came in to learn. It's what we chose before we embodied as our soul contracts. And we chose the conditions and situations that are hard, and some are a lot harder than others, because we needed to experience them to balance other lifetime experiencing. And balance is what we so need to achieve for spiritual awareness and soul evolvement.
That's what we're here for.
It is. Going back to prayer just a moment, Matthew said the best prayer is simply for one's own or another's highest good.
Absolutely.
And that is without limitations. The answer can be even grander than what you think you want. Or it can be exactly the opposite. But the the open doors that keep being offered, or open windows, are the various synchronous steps that we have the opportunity to enter and experience. And when we are nudged to do that, when we recognize sort of the aha, then we are following what we chose in our soul contracts, because we certainly don't consciously remember. But
right.
We do have that guidance.
And you can feel it when you're following it. You know,
Carolyn, yes, exactly.
Carolyn Mace says, when you're in your life and you're feeling terrible discomfort, depression, anxiety, maybe even physical illness, and nothing is going right, it's because you're out of sync with your contract, and you're fighting and you're resisting. And, you know, emotional pain comes from this resistance. Well, then somebody might say, well, how am I supposed to know what my soul contract is? How can I be aligned with it and not resist it? Yes, I'm depressed. Yes, I have anxiety. Yes, I have all these illnesses. Okay, I get that maybe I'm not in alignment with my purpose here on earth and my highest good. How do I know what that is? And the only way to know what that is through prayer and meditation, to just release all your judgments, release your attachments to how things should be, and ask, this is the prayer. This is the only prayer that makes sense. Just like Matthew says, show me the highest good. Whatever it is, God, guide, whatever, I will do it. There was a wonderful chant that I learned in a workshop that I was in. It's an Islamic word called Inshallah. And I used to go down at the canyon behind my house when I would hike, and I would stand there and scream, Inshallah, just out into the world. It means, okay, God, do me, take me, whatever it is, I will do it. It's complete breaking down of that barrier of that human ego thing that wants to wrangle the way things are. And if all you do is ask for the highest good, you're not going to get a pain-free life. You might get cancer. You might lose your child in a car accident. That is for the highest good. It's very difficult for people to see that. But looking back on your life and your experience with Matthew, look who you are because of this. You know, Matthew's death was for the highest good of thousands of people, maybe even millions. I don't know how many people have read your book, but that's how it works. And Danny says, if you realize that every thought is a prayer, you'll know that every prayer is always answered.
Well said. Well said. You know, because your book really did go into your traumatic marriage.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you ever used that word to describe your marriage, but that's the way I perceived it. I could certainly relate to it from
yeah.
my own experience. But Danny helped you understand your and your husband's relationship and from his much higher perspective. Would you mention just a bit of that, because I think there are so many people. I mean, our relationships are critical, whether they're with a mate, with a child, with a parent, and it really doesn't matter. It's the basis of relationships that go back to the pre-birth agreements,
yes,
where all souls play their roles to help all others. They're designed for the benefit of all of the principals who agree to share a lifetime. And, you know, some roles are heavier than others. Somebody has to play the heavy if that's what another in the pre-birth agreement needs for balancing.
Mm-hmm, exactly,
and
right.
We have no idea of this, of course, once we get down here.
Yeah, there are two. There's a little thing that Danny, just for the listeners, Danny, I was with Danny's stepfather, my third husband, for the entire 10 years of Danny's illness, literally from the week Danny started to show symptoms when he was 7 till 4 months after he died, was the 10 years I was with this man. And it was almost like when he showed up in our life, it was almost like Danny's soul said, oh, good, you've arrived, you're here, good, now we can get this party started, we got work to do. And it was bracketed that way, that the three of us were together in this chaotic, abusive, insane relationship. And the best way I can describe what Danny said about it is, I'm going to read you his little quote from the book. This is what he says. The souls in every family choose one another equally, and the experiences they share are magnificent, perfect manifestations of the plan made by each soul for its growth. With each experience, everybody has a chance to transform habits, responses, behaviors, beliefs, and energy patterns. This is how family groups are supposed to function, which is why there can be no such thing as a dysfunctional family. Which is exactly what you just said, Susie.
Yes, there are neither victim nor victor.
Yes,
in,
right. Yes.
These relationships, that they provide the situations that each person needs to grow.
And the other thing Danny says that's really interesting, and I'm sure Matthew says this too, is remember that the perspective we have in heaven does not have any judgment on this is good, this is bad. So in heaven, and Danny's actually showed me scenes of this, where he is with members of his soul family and with guides and teachers and helpers, and they're actually talking about, okay, well, let's see what we've got on the agenda for your growth next time. You know, how can we work through this one and that one? And they're actually making plans. And the way Danny says it is, from the perspective in heaven, it might serve to balance somebody's soul experience by having their next incarnation as a disabled child in a war-torn country with, you know, no legs, starving to death. And from the perspective in heaven, it's like, yes, that's a great plan. That would work perfectly to help me process and balance, you know, some issue I had with my ego in another life, or some kind of debt that I owe to somebody that I took care of when they were disabled, or something like that. And so it's a great idea from the perspective in heaven, because there's no judgment that it's bad to be starving, or it's bad to be poor, or it's bad to be disabled. Then, of course, when we take birth and we come to earth and we're in that body, we forget the heavenly perspective, and the ego is now in charge. And it says, this sucks. I don't want this body. I don't want this life. I'm suffering. I'm miserable. I'm a victim. We don't remember that perspective in heaven. But through meditation and prayer, I think we can learn to tune into that and close that gap a little bit.
I agree with you, because it has worked for me. But I do want to mention that since we forget the soul contracts, the pre-birth agreement, and all the kinds of discussions that Danny told you about and Matthew has told me about, once we're here and all of that is forgotten and free will reigns, we have the choice of paying attention to conscience and inspiration and the other things that motivate us, and we can deviate from that pathway. Of course, we do create a lot of hardships that aren't necessary, but not everybody follows the soul contract. That's the reason we come back again and again and again, because once we leave this physical lifetime and we're back in spirit, and we can look back at the last lifetime and say, uh-oh, I really screwed it up. But hey, next time I want the same thing. I have learned. I'm going to have some remembrance of this so that I do better next time.
Mm-hmm.
And I know from Matthew that some in our soul grouping, even the very small major principles in the pre-birth agreement, did deviate and did not follow through, which did impact all the rest of us to some extent. But nevertheless, that is an aspect of what we call karma,
mm-hmm.
which is neither a reward nor a punishment.
Never, of
it
course.
Is an opportunity to achieve the balance that we need for our souls to grow.
To complete the package, absolutely. And that's where free will comes in. You can change anything, anytime.
Exactly.
And as Danny says, here, I just found another little blurb from him about this here. He said, no matter what, you're already doing what you came here to do, because you choose every thought and every action, and whatever you choose steers you along your path. But the path can always change because you have free will, and awareness always triggers change. So as you gain each new piece of awareness, the whole game board transforms. People and places shift, and you make new decisions based on the new information you've received. And, you know, you start to realize that you're creating situations to bring forth exactly the lessons you came here to address, but there's no hurry. You can pick one, you can go through, you can avoid one, you can skip one. He says anything you miss or avoid, you'll get later, so there's no hurry. You have all the time in the world. And that's true. I mean, there's no time. So anything that you lay out in your plan, you can absolutely deviate from. Ultimately, it will all balance out. That's what we're here to do.
It sort of comes down to an open mind or a closed mind. Well, I don't mean that's the only factor.
Yeah.
But in the case of our family, it was a totally closed mind that one of us never got past.
Mm-hmm. I understand.
Fortunately, it was not I.
I know. I understand. That's what you're saying.
Yeah. I'd certainly hate to have to experience everything that I have experienced in my 75 years. I'd hate to go through all of this again because I needed the groundwork, the most significant events, to be able to open up and just allow awareness to enter. I mean, I know what Danny says about time, and he's so right, because Earth is the only place that has linear time. The other civilizations, at least those who are beyond our third density brain power, understand about the timelessness of the continuum. But we're still dealing with things, you know, past, present, and future. And although that is changing.
Oh, it is changing. Everything is changing, you know. And, you know, the fact that we're having this conversation on a public forum and there aren't mind police knocking down our doors is pretty amazing. You know, the fact that mediums like John Edward can be on national television is amazing. And it is evidence that things are changing. There's definitely increased consciousness going on everywhere, and I'm so grateful for the internet and for increased higher functioning communication tools to spread this kind of information around. It's a miraculous time to be alive and to be working in the consciousness field.
Yes, and things are moving at such a rapid pace. It's, you know, if you, well, not that we know that much about previous civilizations, of course, but just in our recorded history, what has happened on Earth in the last 60 years is just sort of mind-boggling.
Yes.
You know, just think about all the inventions, and certainly including the Internet, which gives us such quick and easy access to information and communication with each other.
Well,
I mean, it's just, well.
Danny says some interesting things about the Internet, too. He says the Internet is a very primitive model of how interdimensional communication happens. You send an email to someone, you have no idea technically why it gets there, but you kind of have faith that it's going to get there. And how is it getting there? You know, it's traveling on an unseen information superhighway, if you will. And the way you communicate with Matthew and the way I communicate with Danny and the way that we can all communicate with each other, if we wanted to, is on a sort of interdimensional superhighway that works. Danny talks about the Internet a lot when he brings this up, that this is kind of how it works. It's a very, you know, we have this, we've invented this Internet thing now because it's just a hint, it's just a glimpse of what we're really capable of using telepathy and using energy. He's got a great sense of humor. He says really silly things to me sometimes. He told me once that we communicate across the Interdimensional Postal Service, kind of like the United Parcel Service, UPS, that delivers packages to your door. He calls this the IPS, Interdimensional Postal Service, that delivers psychic packages. He has quite a sense of humor.
yes, Matthew does, and so does God.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, but, you know, that's understandable because since God is the composite of all in existence in this universe, and each of us is a part of God, of course, everybody here who has a good sense of humor, it becomes a part of God. So,
well, because we are God, you know, we
yeah,
are
exactly,
God.
We
yeah.
are all gods and goddesses.
Well, yeah, because we're just a little piece of that creator energy sort of split off into these bodies having these experiences, and there's no separation and no difference, and this is the reason why so many people have had so much pain related to the religions that they were brought up in, because they were told, God's over here and you're over there, and you cannot get there. You can pray, you can fast, you can, you know, be a good person, you can go to church, you can do whatever, but you will never be where God is. And that is the most incorrect teaching imaginable.
It is.
Yeah, because the real truth is we are no different than God. There is no separation. The idea of separation and a hierarchy is really an illusion. We have the same access to that divine energy that any, you know, prophet or priest or medium has, because we are from that energy. We just don't remember that that's our home.
It's really soul voice to soul voice.
Yes, nice way to put it, yeah.
That's what this communication is. It's, yeah, I love Danny's expression of the Postal Service.
Yeah, I know. He's a hoot.
yeah, it is. You mentioned, well, I still have so many notes here to ask you about, and we're running out of time, but the healing courtyard.
Mm.
And I think that if you could just speak a bit about that, it could be very helpful to listeners.
Mm-hmm.
Well, about how they can apply it to their own lives.
Yeah, Danny told me that the way healing works, and we can all do this, is it goes soul to soul. So, for example, if I had someone close to me who was ill, I could meditate on that person. This is what Danny does. He brings somebody to a place that he calls the healing courtyard, and he talks to their soul. He gave me an example of a man who was sleeping in a hospital bed, and the man's soul was trying to decide if it was ready to die to leave the body or live or what to do with this illness that he had. And so this man asked, this man, it could be anybody, asked for help, prays and meditates and say, I need some guidance, I need some help. And as soon as you ask that, the guides and the angels and the teachers just jump on it. And you go to another dimension with them where they work with your soul. And you can literally talk about it and analyze your situation. What would it serve now if I have this disease, if I heal this disease, if I live or I die? And you almost sit in counsel with wise teachers to work on your plan about this situation. This is how healing happens. And we can do this ourselves in our own meditations. We can do this by reaching out to guides. I think that, you know, there are people on earth who are very gifted counselors and advisors who can work with the soul to help it make a choice about what to do next. And the way Danny explained this to me, or the way he showed it to me visually, was in this healing courtyard, which was this beautiful place where he meets with people's souls to work on their plan.
Thank you for describing that. I was so touched when I read that part of the book. Please excuse me a moment. I need to speak about my next program, and then I will get back to you. And what I'd like you to do is just please tell listeners what you feel is most important for them to focus on in these times. My guest for the next show, March 19th, is Russ Michael, the author of many spiritually based books, including Finding Your Soulmate, the book that coined the term soulmate. From his home in Austria, Michael, he's much better known by Michael than by Russ. He also publishes a worldwide newsletter with information that ranges from a healthy lifestyle to contact with advanced civilizations. So please be sure to tune in March 19th and listen to Michael talk about his enthusiastic approach to life. Okay, back to you, Terry.
Okay, so the one thing that I think would be the most useful is, probably to understand what forgiveness really is. I think that was the best lesson in all of this. It was no accident that I had the kind of marriage that I had. And when you realize that forgiveness does not mean condoning bad behavior, it means releasing your attachment to what you've created around that bad behavior and your injury and your story and everything that you've attached to whatever the thing is that you don't want to forgive. If you can learn how to see everything as being all one, which of course is a cliche, but what that means is I am not separate from the person who injured me. I'm not separate from the criminal or the perpetrator. If we're all one, then that person is part of the collective mind. We created all of this together, and I forgive him in the sense that I see the oneness that I share with him. If I could say anything to the world, I think that would be it. And as we do that kind of forgiving and releasing, it peels away so many layers of attachment and negativity and stuff that we carry with us. And as we start to peel those things away, we can hear the voice of the divine so much better.
Thank you. What a perfect way to wrap up this show. Thank you for being with me today, Terry. I think we're always together in spirit anyway.
Absolutely.
And, well, I know we are. And I just want to thank our listeners for joining in today. And from Matthew and me, love and peace to all of you and to all of Earth. So goodbye for today.
Thank you, Susie.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.